This is CliffCentral.com.
Nakane Toure is here. He was very worried that we were going to, because this is a pre-recorded interview, he thought, yes. Oh no, we can edit it and take out all the good stuff. And
well, this is the thing is, that's if there's any good stuff. This is me assuming and being being egotistical.
You're in the studio with me.
Yes.
When last did we catch up?
This was in 2015.
Yeah, it's been a while, dude. Yeah. You
look no, at the, was it 2015? Yeah, it was.
Look at what you're doing. You don't even live in this country anymore.
I know.
That's how successful you are.
Well,
I'm not saying people who leave are successful. I'm saying your career has taken off internationally.
Mm-hmm.
You now have a reason to not hang around here anymore. I mean, listen, Alice in the Eastern Cape misses you, but you don't stick around there, you know?
I don't know.
Do you think they miss you?
I don't know. I don't know. My relationship with the Eastern Cape is very fraught right now, as you might possibly know.
You're such an evolved guy in so many ways. Yeah, I thought about you the other day because I heard one of your songs, and I suddenly thought, here's a guy who, you're a real, like, 21st century guy. I'll explain what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, you're not attached to all the crap that makes so many people stuck.
Okay.
Nationality, religion, sexuality, all the bullshit that bugs people down. Do you know what I mean?
I understand. You
don't hold on to any of that stuff. You identify with whatever you identify with. Of course, you've got like a feeling of tradition. You've got a feeling of kind of belonging.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
But you choose it.
Yeah.
Which is so, do you realize how different that is to how most people approach the world?
Not until recently. Until recently,
but you do acknowledge, like, that's something that is different about you.
I know that now, because I'm meeting a lot of people, and when you sort of compare your decisions, which seem completely natural to you, and how people react to them, then you start to realize how different you are.
It must be very hard for people who are not like you to understand someone like you, and they must have very odd feelings about what you are saying no to and what you're saying yes to and how much it means to them. Because for them, those decisions are made and they can't get away from them.
Yeah, but it's all...
I know this sounds very philosophical for the start of a discussion, and there's lots of...
Isn't that where it should start?
I want to get into the details later on. But this to me is so significant when you look at how the world's changing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how... You can choose your place in the world. You can choose what you're going to own and what you're not going to own and what people are allowed to put into your box and what they can't.
Yeah. I mean, having said that, I mean, the choices that I have made and have decided to stick to were choices that were maybe forced upon me by circumstances, right? So I felt like I had no choice but to be who I am or completely conform. And I tried conforming.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Before my first album came out, I was a very conservative Christian. And I really, really tried to sort of snuff out my idiosyncrasies. I really did. I tried like for 5-6 years. And then the volcano just erupted.
When you were trying, was it painful? Was it a suffering in silence?
Unbelievably painful.
Yeah.
But I thought I was doing it for Jesus.
Yeah.
And
when did that change?
I ended my relationship with Jesus Christ around...
You two were so happy together.
We were happy together for the first 2 years, but then, you know, I realized that there were other men out there.
And he was so selfish. He was a selfish lover. You just had to worship.
He does
worship.
Say he's jealous.
Mm-hmm. Which is never a good thing in a partner.
Never a good thing.
So I always wonder for people who are religious what it's like to have... a relationship with someone who's told you up front that they're jealous. If someone said that to me in a relationship, I'd be out of the front door before they could even count to 10.
But isn't that what you're conditioned to believe is love?
Well,
people are always like, oh, you know.
It puts people in fear. It doesn't put them in
It does love. Put people in fear, but people feel desired when someone is jealous. Like if they do something and then they're like, oh, he's so jealous.
Yeah, I feel like...
Which I think that's insecurity.
I think it's not like mentally healthy people who are fulfilled by jealousy. If you look at all the people who have jealousy in their lives or who allow jealousy to be a part of their life, they don't tend to be the happiest people.
I don't think so. I mean, for me... actually, it's not complicated. I've never wanted to own anything, right? I remember when I started shacking up with my boyfriend and he wanted to make a home for us. And I was like, oh, this is all really great, but I'm not going to be here forever. And I think he didn't understand at the time what I meant by that. I was like, I'm not going to be here. So I don't understand why we need to buy all of this stuff that's fancy, which we're going to leave behind anyway.
Yeah.
Because I knew it. I didn't know how, I didn't know when, but I knew that I was not going to need any of this.
Is that why it's easy to also live in another country now?
Yeah. My mom said to me, she made a joke. She said, oh, you can, I always forget about it. It's so easy for you to move on. And I always had to. I can live anywhere. I don't care. As long as I have the things I need.
So what are those things you need? Because you are a musician. Is the music something you need? You can take that anywhere you go.
Because I've got my body.
You've got your body. Got your mind.
Got my mind for now. I've got, I'm a touring musician, which I love. Yeah. I love being on the road. I love performing every night.
You don't mind being in hotels, being in...
I like it.
You like that?
I like it. I like being rootless.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be... Because that's very nomadic, and that's not the default setting for most people. Even people who call themselves nomads, they still like to have a home base.
I don't care.
You don't?
No, I mean, maybe not, I mean, not now. A 30-year-old kind of doesn't care about that stuff. Home for me... Home has always been such a fraught and loaded word, right? And because I wasn't, I mean, okay, see, so, for example, I was born into, I mean, my mother had me and I was raised by my grandmother for the first 5 years. But yeah. Even though I was living with my grandmother, I was still sort of being passed around. So I never really had any stability for a long, long time until I was 7 and I was adopted by my aunt and her husband. But even then, you know, I'd already, I guess, learned to be self-sufficient, learned to be adaptable.
At that age, Jesus, that's
hard. You have no choice.
Yeah, but that's so hard, man. That's not how a kid should grow. I mean, there's so many kids in South Africa who do grow up that way.
Exactly.
But man, it does not give you advantages. I mean, it might make you resourceful and all of that stuff, but you know, time and time again, they prove that your character is going to be tested in ways that it shouldn't be tested for a 6-7-year-old. It shouldn't.
It shouldn't. It shouldn't.
It can make you so jaded.
Yeah. I was at the British Museum the other day, and it was interesting to me. I walked into the British Museum, and I was just so dumbfounded by what amazing things human beings are capable of, and what amazing things we've been capable of for thousands of years, right? And then I logged on to Twitter, and I was like, we are also incredibly disgusting, right?
So you see like the Ishtar gates that were put up in ancient Babylon.
Exactly.
And you think, look at this.
My God.
These people were doing this 3,500 years ago.
Exactly.
And you go onto Twitter, and you're like, these people are like cavemen.
Yeah. But also this
loves the contrast.
I mean, this is the interesting thing about that, is that like people always talk about the fact that like those one of the things they say to make you feel bad is that they call you an animal, right? They go, he's an animal, and they go, well, we are animals.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think we shouldn't forget. We try to distance ourselves from quote unquote wild animals.
Yeah.
And we forget that.
And we get very upset if certain people compare us to animals, especially if there's kind of a racist undertone to it and all that kind of shit, which I understand. Yeah. But I think it's a beautiful thing to accept your animal nature.
I think so. I mean,
you know, think about sex drive, think about hunger, think about survival instincts. Those are animal characteristics. If you own them, and you can be in charge of them. And also it gives you kinship with the other animals. Like you suddenly develop a bond to other creatures, which if you think of yourself as separate, you can never have.
I think so. I mean, I'm not trying to bash. You know what? I'm speaking for myself and no one else. And I only ever speak for myself and no one else, because I can't ever speak for a collective. Mm-hmm. But from a person who grew up in a very Christianized environment, and I'm deliberate by saying Christianized,
right?
because Christianize and Christian are two different things.
Yes.
Right? Is that human beings are taught every day that they're superior, that they're chosen,
mm-hmm.
and they're chosen to make the world submit to their will. Right? And from that point of view, you already see yourself as something that's superior. Right? And not something that... And there's something that should be... there's some supremacy over everything else around the world. Especially if you're a man.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you're a straight man.
Yeah.
Right? But having said that, I mean, talking... You know, having left Christianity and being more in touch with my quote-unquote animal nature, I also can't forget, you know, the constructs around us.
That no, sure.
The world,
of course,
right?
Yeah. So there's the reality.
Yeah. So even though I've made the decision that I've made to live the way that I live, there's still certain things that I can't get. I hate walking through an airport as a black person. It just makes me angry, especially in Europe, where I know I'm going to be called at the side with a musical instrument, you know. But you pick your battles. I'm not going to have a fight with every person who disagrees with how I live my life. I'm never going to talk to them ever again. Who gives a shit?
What does that mean? Like you, the life you've chosen, and you talk about it like it's a hardship.
Not necessarily.
No. I'm not judging or casting aspersions. Yeah. What I'm saying is that you say that there's this life you've chosen, and it does sound a little burdensome. Is it living as Nakane, who's not attached to anything? Because that's a part I admire. Yeah. Is it that you feel other a lot of the time? I mean, this is a fascinating thing for me, and this is why I love talking to you. It's never about, like, oh, tell me about this song and where the inspiration came from, all that shit that everybody always asks you. I love the thinker in you because I can hear it in your music as well.
Mm.
What is that life you've chosen, and why does it sound like something desirable on the one hand and something extremely burdensome on the other?
Maybe it's desirable because maybe... I mean, what you see in other people always seems a little better than what it is, a little bit better.
Yeah.
We always want what we don't have, and then you have it and you go, ah, it's not what I thought it was going to be.
Uh-huh.
So I've made peace with where I am, what I desire, and just tried not to be a dick.
I mean, you said 30 years old?
Yeah.
Okay, so what would the 30-year-old Nakane Ture say to the 20-year-old? If you could go back in time to speed up his progress, to make him happier earlier on.
None of this shit matters.
Really? That's what you'd say to him? None of this shit matters?
None of this shit matters.
That's a dangerous thing to say to a 20-year-old, because you know what they're going to do. They're
going to blow shit up.
Get out of control, right?
Exactly. Which is why I'm happier that all of this stuff, all of the decisions that I feel I've made, which are relatively new decisions that I've made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Nakane who... came out with this album in 2013 is completely different to the Nakane that's existing today.
But you're still proud of that one.
Yeah, completely.
He's part of you.
In every single way. Because so, this one wouldn't exist without that one.
I'm still trying to like narrow in on what exactly it is that's changed that has been a decision.
I'm less afraid.
Of who? Of what?
Of the world and of myself. And I'm less afraid of, like, I always used to say, and I think I meant it. I was like, I don't care if anyone doesn't like me, et cetera, but I actually mean it now.
Okay. This is powerful. This is what I'm getting at. And I know for a lot of people listening to this now, this might've been a little frustrating because I had an agenda. Like my agenda is that I want to find out what's happened since we last spoke. And it's not these are the events that I've been at. These are the tours I've done. These are the songs I've written. Mm. It's the evolution of the human being. Individualism to me is such a powerful thing. And when I see it in people, because I try to live my life. You know, I try to be an individual. And we all do.
Mm.
And we all say what you just said now. I don't care what people think. Most people really do care what people think. It's the reason they wake up in the morning. It's the reason they go to work. It's the reason they try to earn money. It's the reason they try to have a family. It's the reason they try to raise that family in the best way they can, because they're actually worried about society judging them.
Mm-hmm.
But what you said now is so powerful. You don't care because not because you think you're an island.
Yeah. I don't think I'm better than anyone else. I don't think my decisions are better.
Okay, so you don't care because?
I don't care because I...
None of these people are thinking about you.
Exactly.
This is what everybody gets caught up
people
in.
People are so... I was talking to a friend of mine who was like, I don't want them to think I'm a fool. I was like, they're thinking about themselves.
Thank you very much. So when you give up, like, your relationship with Jesus, you were Christianized,
yeah,
in your own words. You are giving up a community, you know?
My closest community.
Right.
Because on some level, you choose your Christian family over your friends.
Yes.
Over your kin, your family, your real family.
And we all know people who've actually been pulled away from the people who love them, sometimes by
the church?
Well, their church, their religion, whatever.
I was told to give up my queer friends because they were bad influences. And what was interesting to me, and I said this in an interview a few days ago, I said what was interesting to me was that when my life fell apart around 2013, when I had no place to live, things like that, like, which was this interesting time because my album was coming out, my dreams are starting to come true, but then my, which is always the case in my life, I don't know why, when my career is going really well, my personal life seems to be falling apart. And I think... my friend said to me, it's sort of a cosmic way of keeping me grounded. And I like that. I like the idea that I don't have time to dwell on, quote-unquote, my achievements.
Right.
I have to move on quickly because...
you've got stuff to do now.
I've got shit to do.
Yeah.
I've got shit to do. And when it comes to art, you know, I take art very seriously, right? Is that I got shit to do, right? So when I make a film, I mean it. When I make an album... I mean it because I was always afraid for a long, long time of dying. And I became even more afraid of dying after I left Christianity because I was so sure that I was going to heaven. Right? Because I was okay, I believe in Jesus. I'm going to go to heaven.
So if everything else fucks out,
at least I'm going to heaven.
I can get to heaven. I think a lot of people, that's the hope they live on, right?
And that's why I can't.
Their lives are horrible. Yeah. And
that's why I can't judge those people.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
And I see. For example, my mom is still a conservative Christian. And I know that my mother would not have survived this disgusting world had she not had that. So having made the decision to leave the church doesn't mean that I don't understand why people choose to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just don't like...
And you're not cruel about that. You don't say to them, I left and you're an idiot for staying. Obviously.
No.
I know. Why do people who don't want to go a certain way... get portrayed by certain people as being enemies rather than just being people who chose their own way? It seems like it's a threat, even though you're not threatening them. They make up a threat in their heads that because you're no longer choosing to be part of the flock, that you're choosing to destroy the flock. That's not what you're saying.
As if this is the only thing, this is the only part of your character that exists. This is the only part in the world that matters in your life. It's not. It's like, your faith is it's just another facet, another layer.
It's sort of like those straight people who think that if someone's gay, they're immediately attracted to every man or every woman. You know, like you're a fat, ugly, unattractive man to women, but because some guy's gay, he's desperately head over heels in love with you by looking at you just because he happens to be
That's
gay.
That's the ego of heterosexuality.
It's weird, right? Isn't that a weird thing? Yeah, it's the same as the ego then of someone who's a believer.
Exactly.
You're somehow
because they think they're right.
You're secretly jealous of them. You're just pretending not to be because you think you're superior, but it's actually their inferiority complex that's got that whole thing going.
I never thought of it that way. That's interesting.
Well, I mean, you can transplant this to almost any situation. It goes for a lot of racism too. Mm. A lot of the people who are the most racist are the ones who are the most insecure.
Of course.
Whether they're white or black,
Toni Morrison said, if you have to stand on someone's shoulders to feel tall, you have a real problem.
Spot on.
So if you have... yeah. So if you have to make someone else feel small in order to make yourself feel big.
I was so keen to give you a call like a couple of months ago when this whole Inqeba thing was happening. And I was very tempted. I wanted to have you on the show because then, first of all, I know you're not afraid to express your opinion. But you must have been furious when you heard the backlash about this movie because you were the lead actor in the movie. I think it meant something to you. I mean, you can't be an actor in something like this and not have any connection to it at all. It's a very moving story. It's a very moving idea. It has a lot to do with you know, culture.
Oh, yeah.
It has a lot to do with history, tradition, and then
modernism.
Modernism. And it has to do with what you identify with, which is a much more modern idea than people give it credit for. It's, you know, if you don't identify with something, even if you are it, you aren't.
Exactly.
This is a very modern idea. Caitlyn Jenner identifies as a woman. Next thing you know, we have to call her a woman.
Mm.
And that's not a bad thing. I think that's progress of a kind. As I make fun of it some of the time, it's a very serious thing. Now, in Inglaba, I mean, this movie is seen by traditional cultural guardians as being a huge threat. How did you feel about it when you heard about the reaction to it? Not the movie itself, because you were in that. You were thinking about it all the time. But when you heard this reaction, were you surprised?
No. I wasn't surprised by the fact that the reaction existed. I was surprised by the extremity of the reaction. I was surprised by... Because, I mean, I know how people value that part of our culture. And that's another interesting thing about it. The language around it. You know, our culture.
Hmm.
As if the people who were in the film did not exist in the culture. Or did not belong to the culture.
Yeah.
And they all were part of the culture. I'm Xhosa.
Mm-hmm.
Bongile is Xhosa. Nizo is Xhosa. All the actors were Xhosa. So when people were speaking about how we were destroying their culture, I was saying how, when we are part of it. And when people are saying that the film was a misrepresentation of the culture, I was saying how, when we are practitioners of the culture, and we are showing you that this exists, how can it be a misrepresentation when I'm Xhosa and I'm telling you that this happens? How does that make any fucking sense? From a semantic level and from a philosophical level, right? Because I'm of the culture, I love the culture, but just because I love the culture doesn't mean I can't say that some of it is problematic, you know? And I think that's the most important part about being alive today, well, in any day, is that you have to be able to call out the problematic parts of yourself, right? So I'm a man. And by that means that I have certain privileges in the world. Even though I'm a gay man, because gay men sometimes think that they don't. And then they become even more problematic sometimes, but that's another conversation. But for example, like having arguments sometimes with men and talking about the fact that I can call myself out and say, I know that I'm privileged because of a penis, right? I think it's important. I think it's important for Xhosa people, Xhosa men, to see the problematics within the culture and talk about it within themselves and sort it out, because it's their shit, right? And it's their responsibility to sort it out. No one else's.
Yeah, but I mean, I love this. I could see the fury in you just now. And I love.
And I thought I was being calm.
No, you are calm. I mean, you thought it through. You're not speaking irrationally and emotionally here, but it does have an emotional component to it, which I think is appropriate. Because you were just excluded from the discussion as if you weren't there.
Yeah.
And I can't help thinking that part of this is authority, that certain people have just accepted an automatic authority, and this has to do with male privilege. It has to do with, you know, hierarchies. You know, when I hear someone like Patikile Holomisa talking about how he's the one who knows what culture is, and like the people who are living it, because they're not the chief, somehow just don't understand, and he's going to come and show you how to practice your culture. it to me, it's like, it's so insulting. It kind of, I hesitate to say this even, but it kind of smacks of the same authority of someone like Verwoerd saying to people, oh, I know black people and I know white people and I've decided this and you guys will catch up. Let me explain, because I'm much more well-versed than you are. It's sort of that, you know, there's this thing about like certain people, and it comes from religious leaders too, where they're like, I'll show you the way, the truth and the light. You can't figure this out yourself. You're too simple-minded. I have a special connection to God or the ancestors or science or fact that you can't have.
I'm not quite sure how to engage with that, but I'll think about it. I've always been wary of people who are self-professed sages.
Hmm.
Like, for example, let me make a very current example. Kanye West having to repeatedly say to us that he's free thinking makes me think that he's very insecure about it. Right? You have to tell me all the time and remind me all the time. How sure are you of it? How confident are you of the fact that you're free thinking? I'm not going to listen to you. You know? Because you keep on telling me that you are. And this might annoy some people. For me, the moment that Jesus Christ becomes problematic is when he becomes a self-professed sage. Up until that point, he's really, he's incredible. You know, he's part of the everyday culture. He's telling people, first person to cast the first stone must be the one who asks it. I love that Jesus. The Jesus who says, I'm the only way, is a Jesus that I part ways with. Because that's the Jesus who's become slightly egotistical. And I was in Joburg a few months ago, I can't remember. And my biological father, who I've only met once, had called me during the Solid Number thing. Mm. And he's saying, which was very interesting, he was saying, I'm proud of you. And And there was a part of me that was like, the knee-jerk action was like, who the fuck are you to tell me you're proud of me? Like, right? But then there was a knee-jerk reaction. And then it was my birthday. I remember it was my birthday. And I was in Paris, and I decided to spend it alone in a hotel room, having a glass of wine, well, glasses of wine, and taking nudes, and just sleeping in bed, listening to music, dancing. It was the most amazing 30th birthday of my life. But not that I'll ever have another one. But I remember lying in bed and thinking, wait a minute, what's that anger? And it wasn't there anymore. And that was freeing to me.
Right? Hang on. Your biological father, you've spoken to once.
Yeah.
He then, because of the furore around this movie,
yeah,
lets you know he's proud of you.
Yes.
Now, I mean, for a lot of people who don't have a relationship but want to with their biological father, that's like the gateway into a relationship with that person. You didn't take that bait.
It's too late.
I get that. That's, first of all, you're a complete rebel. You will always do the opposite of what's expected of you, which I kind of, I have such admiration for. Then you also, you think, you immediately, I mean, this takes a huge amount of, first of all, self-confidence, which I don't doubt you have in bucket loads. But second of all, it's like a self-actualization. You kind of figured out that you don't need his opinion. It's nice to have,
yeah,
but you don't attribute more to it than needs to be attributed to it. And then you spend the 30th birthday, where most people would think, well, here's this guy who's got this incredible career. He's now a film actor. He's a musician. He's got this this growing reputation in the art world. He spends it on his own in a hotel room with a couple of glasses of wine. It seems to me like you have reached a point most people only get to when they're very old. 30 years old, you're doing this.
It's
like Socrates drinking the poison because he's, you know, he's got...
It's like, I've learned everything I need to learn.
Yeah. Stoicism.
Which is also bullshit. Fuck you, Socrates.
You can never learn everything.
What the fuck do you think you are? It's just... And I think, I mean, and it goes back... And I mean, Garth, it really goes back to that lyric by Erykah Badu. The one who really knows something is the one who knows nothing at all. Right? Every book I read, I realize how many more books I need to read. Right? Because you're like, oh my God. I used to think, I remember when I was 19 years old, right? And I was like, oh my God, there's so much to learn in the world. And I still feel this way. And I was like, if I could read all of these books in this list, I will know a lot, right? And then you read all of them and you go, oh, there are more books that I haven't read. And that's really humbling, right? And that for example, I used to be known as Nakane Ture. Now I'm just Nakane. And that was a very important decision in my life to know that, for example, and it goes back to my childhood, which we talked about in the beginning of this conversation, that instability.
Mm-hmm.
When I changed my surname from Nakane Mavoso, which was my mother's maiden
name,
I changed it to Mahlakahlaka, right? And that was sort of like I felt a nuclear family belonging. Mm. Right. And then I changed it to Nakane Turner, and I felt a cultural, political belonging.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Pan-African sort of thing. And when I was like, you know what? I don't need any of this anymore. I like my first name. I'm just Nakane now. I don't need my family to like me. I love them, and it would be nice if they did.
Jeez, how liberating. Because a lot of people would listen to this, and they'd say, well, this guy's so up his own backside with changing his name the whole time. The way you've explained it, I totally get it. So I'm not even – it's not what I'm thinking.
It's ancient also.
Because you hear like Prince, you know, during his life he changed his name, then he was this. And you hear, you know, Sean John, P. Diddy, Puff Daddy. Yeah. And really – I kind of you're the first person who's explained this to me decently, where I can now understand it's not some egotistical thing. It's actually the opposite. It's like, what do I really need? What are the minimum requirements in terms of labels that I'm willing to accept for me?
Yeah.
That I can, so that I can live as freely as possible, be as adaptable to the world, and as liberated as I could possibly be. I love this explanation.
I'm just trying.
How do you get there, man? How do people get there? There must be young people who will listen to this and go, that's all good and well for him. Unique situation.
Not unique situation.
My story, explain. How do you get there?
I don't think I'm unique. I don't think my story is unique. I don't think that I'm any special. I just think that I've learned, and this is such a silly explanation, but it's really how it's what's helped me. I've learned to breathe through it. It's like anything else in the world. Like sex. It's like being on stage and being nervous, being afraid to fly. And then you minimize it, right? And what's really important here? Once you're taking those breaths in and out, what's really important? What am I going to look back in my life and go, that was important, that wasn't important? I always look back on, and I hope there are no kids in high school listening to this, but I always look back and laugh. I was actually having this conversation with my movement teacher this morning. In high school, when you didn't do your homework, it seemed like the end of the world. How much of that matters now?
Nothing.
And you know
not
that.
Not one piece of.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
so the maths exam that you stressed yourself out about.
You thought if you failed it, it would be the end of your life. And it wasn't. The boyfriend that you loved and you thought that if you broke up, it would be the end of your life. And it wasn't.
Well, how many people do you see in relationships now, and they because of social media, we're exposed to it in ways that we've never had to before. Because you could always get out of the room if a couple were annoying you.
Exactly.
Now you see it everywhere. And you see them,
that's funny.
You see them talking to each other.
You can always grow up.
When you guys do break up, because inevitably you will.
Well, some people don't.
Well, look. Let's be fair. You said at the beginning when you were talking about material possessions, people building a nest, building a home. Like, in the end, everything's gone, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everything. This building, this equipment.
Nothing lasts forever.
Even the metals that you wear on your watch or around your neck. These things are all going to eventually deteriorate.
Exactly.
Everything goes. 10,000 years from now, there will be no evidence
of
that Nakane and Gareth were ever in this studio.
And do you know what? That changed my life as well.
But it's again freeing, right?
Completely.
Because then you suddenly go, well, you could take yourself seriously, or you can just enjoy the ride.
Oh, and also, I could. So my producer for my last album, for this new album, which is called "You Will Not Die." Yes, it's the plug.
Go on.
And my producer says, so he was working with Franz Wadi, who is this French musician, and apparently she was really afraid of going outside because she was always afraid of dying. Which is something that I related to. Because the last time we had the conversation, we were talking about these fears I had.
Yes.
And she said one day she was changing the bulb in her house, in the safe space, the sanctuary of hers. And she said she slipped and she fell. And she thought, if I'm not safe here, you know what? Fuck it. I could die anywhere.
And she walked outside.
She walked outside. She's like, there are no safe spaces. There's no safety. There's no savior.
Well, that makes a lot of people very uncomfortable. It's fine for you to say, but there's
for me,
so many people.
And then again, this is, again, I mean, and I think it's very important for me to go back again, because I haven't forgotten what I said earlier on, that I only speak for myself.
Yeah, listen, you've made that clear, and I love that you have, because so many people appoint themselves spokespeople for groups.
How? And nobody
nominated them. My favorite one is when people start speaking on behalf of the poor. And you're like,
And not always people who are not poor.
Yeah, I mean, but it's always some middle class. Yeah, it's always some middle class
who has
university graduate who suddenly thinks that they're there as the savior of the poor, you know, a modern day Jesus.
Yeah.
But here's the thing that you mentioned earlier that I'm a little bit fixated on. I apologize if I wasn't paying complete attention. Mm. You said a movement teacher?
Oh, yeah.
What's that? fuck is a movement teacher?
I perform live, and I knew I wanted this album, the live part of this album, to be really physical.
Mm-hmm.
A show for me is not a show. It's not a successful show in my eyes, unless by the end of the show I am physically exhausted. That the only thing I want to
give it all.
Yeah, I want to go to sleep. Because I don't party after shows. I don't drink when I'm told.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't party because I don't really go out afterwards. I normally go to the hotel and sleep because I have to go and perform the next day.
Yes.
And I take this very seriously. So, and I wrote songs. I wrote these songs to be very vocally challenging mm-hmm. for myself so that I could be disciplined. And I wear these ridiculous platforms so that I can be. It's like a bondage thing. It's like a BDSM thing.
Yeah.
It's a weird live performance BDSM thing where you find ways to, I guess, limit yourself and find ways to. So you limit yourself so you can find ways to break out of those limitations, right? And it's just it's an experiment.
So what does the movement teacher do?
Help me find ways to be calm when I feel bound.
Does this movement teacher say to you, stick your arm out?
No.
What are they? How does it work? Explain it like I'm an idiot, because I am, clearly.
Because, I mean, my boyfriend doesn't do it because he used to laugh at me about this.
Yeah.
But it literally is about going back to being a child and closing your eyes and just moving your body. Even if there's 50 people on watching you, because you have to be comfortable with that, right?
Yeah.
And when you're a child, you're not afraid of that stuff. If you're annoyed in the middle of a mall,
you have a tantrum.
You throw stuff on the floor. Exactly. And when I feel like that on stage, and I feel like I want to throw myself on the floor, I want to be able to do it safely, of course, so that I can perform the next day. And that's what this movement teacher has been able to teach
me. Wow. I'm blown away by all the things that you're involved in at the moment. You have a new anticipated second album.
It's out already.
This is You Will Not Die, right?
You Will Not Die.
Okay. You're a big advocate of therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Was that true? Well, I mean, that's what I read.
I mean, it helped me. But I stopped it.
I think, you probably...
Because I have an addictive personality.
So you would have kept going?
So I was talking to my therapist because I was... Forgive me, babe, if you were listening. Because my boyfriend and I were going through problems, and it was all because of my fault. And...
No, you must be impossible to live with.
I can be. I can be.
I can see how that irritated you. You just got a little irritated with me. I like that.
No, but it's true. I can be. And do you know what really irritates me is that my mom and my boyfriend gang up on me.
Yeah.
But I know my faults, right? And when I'm at fault, I own up to it. Which is also really annoying to know to be somebody who knows their faults and does it anyway.
How long are you in South Africa for?
A few more days.
Okay, and then it's back to London.
And then, well, I'm going
back. Where are you off to now?
I'm going to Cannes, and then I'm going on a German tour.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm back to London, and then it's on the road until end of the year.
Have you stopped and thought about how much you've done? Are you happy with where you are?
I'm happy with where I am.
That's
happy,
fantastic. Not comfortable, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you're like complacent.
No.
I'm saying happy as in, like, you take stock and you go,
oh yeah,
Nakane is
living
that a
more.
Good life.
I'm doing that more now.
You got it, right?
And that's amazing. Yeah. Like, that makes me so happy. Like, when I'm in the car and I'm in the van and we're traveling and I'm looking out the window and it's green fields and there's nothing and my battery has died and I have nothing else to do but read or think. And I'm like, wait a minute. where am I in the world right now? I don't know where I am sometimes, but, and I'm living my dream, my absolute dream. Heroes of mine that I never ever thought would ever know who I am are sending messages on Facebook telling me that they love me.
That's great.
And for me, that makes me really emotional.
You deserve it. It's a good emotion. You deserve all of this. And I'm thrilled that we got to spend a bit of time together.
Thank you.
And I'm happy that you managed to spare us a little bit of your time, because I know you are busy at the moment. And well done on everything, man.
Thank you.
Particularly the tough stuff.
And
being
rabbis. They don't end.
No.
They don't end.
No, but well done. You're waking people up one person at a time, sometimes a couple of thousand at a time. I know how you operate.
It's exciting.
Thanks, man.
Be uncomfortable.
Yes. Yeah, that's the lesson. I could talk to you all day. Pleasure
too.
To see
that's
you.
That's fine, actually.
Thanks,
Nakane. Pleasure to see you, too.
Great. Nakane, everybody.
This is CliffCentral.com.